Hello and welcome to the Actors Guild Industry Unwrapped podcast with me, Sam Baines. This episode is sponsored by Penguin in the Room, helping actors navigate the world of social media and marketing. My guest this episode is casting director Andy Brierley.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Thanks for having me. He's made me a cup of tea and everything.
Well, you know, we try and please.
This isn't normally what actors get, is it? Normally,
if we keep them waiting, we'll make them a cup of tea. But okay. Generally, no, it's in and out.
So, we're going to have a little chat about the industry, but first, I'd like to start with my quick fire round.
Okay.
Okay, here's the quick fire round.
Let's
ready?
Do it.
Go. Tea or coffee?
Coffee, always.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Indoors or outdoors?
Indoors, and anyone who knows me will know how true that is.
Good. Socks or bare feet?
I'm going to go socks.
TV or film?
Professionally, TV, but when I'm like doing my own thing, then film.
Oh, I'll let you have two there.
Sorry.
Homemade or shop bought?
Shop bought. I'm really lazy.
Vanilla or chocolate?
Vanilla.
Comedy or drama?
Oh, you're going to make me pick. Comedy.
City break or beach holiday?
Beach holiday.
Spotlight or casting network?
Spotlight.
UK or US?
UK.
And that's the quick fire round.
I think I nailed it.
I think you did.
Thanks.
I feel like we've learned a lot about you just in those.
There was a couple of professional ones that sort of was like, oh, okay, we're going serious. Okay.
Let's talk about your job. How would you describe your job?
I suppose, well, I'm head of department, which I just think sounds quite grand. And the department is ensuring that the right person is in the right job. So we help the director and producer navigate through the quite complex area of casting. Someone once described it as managing the casting process, and we're sort of experts in that. I think it's trying to make sure that we help directors and producers find the right person for the job.
Great. So I always think, you know, at the airport when you go into a different country and you have to put your job title.
Yeah.
Would you put casting director or would you put something more vague?
If I get the option to put casting director, then I'll always put it. But on lots of things, you know, if you're applying for something official.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to be on the drop down box.
Yeah.
So you have to say something like.
What do you put?
Manager or company owner. So it's very vague. People don't. It's not a very well known job. Obviously, yeah. In the industry, people know, but outside of the industry, it does get met with quite a few blank stares and lots of questions. People are generally quite interested, but they haven't always quite pinned down what it means.
And casting is kind of one of the only industries that is female dominated. So, how is it to be a fella in casting?
I think it probably works for me and against me. I don't really have any sense of what it would be like to work in another industry. This is sort of what I've done for a long time. I imagine there are jobs where people think, you know, you sort of stand out for the right reasons. And I know there have definitely been jobs where people like to work with women. A lot of the industry is quite male-led, directors and producers. So I suppose it depends how they feel about working with a guy rather than a girl. It certainly doesn't seem to have done me any it's not been done badly for me, but I think it's kind of cool to work in an industry that's female led because most aren't.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. So what would you say is the best part of your job?
Oh God. The best part about my specific job is that I run my own business and that I get to run my life the way I want it to be. Creatively, the best thing is discovering new talent, getting to go to the theatre all the time and sort of see what's out there. There is this amazing thing where if you are watching a TV programme or a film or a play and you think, God, that person's amazing, you could literally be in a room with them within, you know, a couple of days because you can call them in for something. So to have access to this incredible talent is amazing, and it never sort of ceases to amaze me that I have access to that world.
So really at heart you're like a super fan and you're just like,
I'm doing this job so
I could get these people in a room.
Yeah, and as I said before, sort of manage that process to be the person that is responsible for finding the talent. You know, that the fact that that's a job at all is hilarious to me, and the fact that I get to do it is just kind of ridiculous. The fact that when most people on a Sunday are going, oh, I've got to go to work tomorrow, and I'm like, well, you know, I don't feel that way. I don't feel angry or disappointed about the idea of going to work. I feel kind of happy about it, and I even look forward to it at times. I think that's a huge gift, and I feel really lucky to have that.
Oh, amazing. Well, now I'm going to ruin that and ask you, what's the worst part of your job?
I think the pressure that we put on ourselves to find the right person, which of course is a good pressure and is also part of the best thing about it, but there is that moment that comes along on an almost daily basis where you think, have I really found them? What, were they the right person? And sometimes I get a little frustrated by the fact that everything is so collaborative. I suppose that's an egotistical thing, but I sometimes feel like when you're a painter, you paint your painting, you put it on the wall, and you go, that's what I've created. Where sometimes it can be hard to exactly pinpoint what you did in the process. Mm. And there were definitely shows where I feel it very strong. I feel my fingerprints were all over that show. I did a production called The Woman in Red at the end of last year for BBC Two, and I feel that my DNA is through every part of that film. But there have definitely been projects where I look at the cast list and I think, where am I in that? You know, where, what did I do? You know, because obviously you've got to make sure that everybody else is happy as well. So the projects where you feel that everyone's kind of worked together symbiotically to create something that you all feel really proud of is so special. But similarly, there are always going to be projects where you feel that, given, you know, even though you did everything you could and you had some strong opinions, ultimately it hasn't quite worked out the way you'd like it to have done.
And do you find that as quite a difficult... Obviously, you're good at working with people. That's why you do what you do. But do you think it's...
Sometimes.
Do you think it's... Is that difficult thing of constantly, as you said, working in a team? Do you feel like you have to be the go-between sometimes and keep everyone...
Yeah, but that's brilliant as well, because then you have to take the blame. But, you know, as in most things, it's a good thing and a bad thing. You know, the buck never really rests on my shoulders, because I will have made the decisions along with a producer, a director, executives. I've met multiple levels at times. So, you know, in the same way that I perhaps don't always look at a cast list and think, that's me, I've put that together. Similarly, when people say, oh, do you ever, you know, get it wrong? Do you ever look at a cast and think, I cast the wrong people? Well, the answer to that is kind of no, really, because it's very rarely exclusively my decision. In fact, probably never. So, you know, sometimes that's frustrating and sometimes it's the best thing about it. So it's certainly not, I don't ever feel like, oh God, I could screw this up. So yeah, I think that's a nice thing. But occasionally you don't get the payoff as well. So you're in that sort of middle ground, which generally I really enjoy.
Whereas I think as actors, we're always like, I could definitely screw this up.
Yeah.
It's all on me.
And I suppose sort of repeating what I've already said, that similarly you could do an amazing job and you can look back at a performance that you gave or a joke that you put together or a stand-up set and just be like, I absolutely nailed it, and that's why I became an actor or a performer. And I definitely have those moments as well. I wonder whether perhaps that is not quite as clear or as often as it would be for an actor, because it is so collaborative what we do.
And do you think that, just off the back of that, do you think there should be more awards for casting directors? Because there aren't...
Well, I learned an interesting fact the other day, that we're the only head of department that gets a single card credit, you know, like DOPs and whatever, that doesn't have an award.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say that because it's collaborative, that, you know, it would be very hard to point out, to figure out who, how the award would work. But I would argue that we're no more collaborative than any other head of department. The whole process is incredibly collaborative. You know, the costume designer doesn't come in and say, that's what you're wearing, off you go. He will come in and present five or six options, just as we will, and then together they'll decide which dress or, you know, costume the character's going to wear. So I don't necessarily see a massive division between what we do as casting directors and what any other head of department does, and it does seem odd that it's not recognised, other than at the Emmys and a couple of other smaller award ceremonies. But certainly on the, you know, the big players at the BAFTAs and the Oscars, it doesn't seem to be happening, which is a shame.
Yeah. Well, we'll start a campaign when we finish this interview.
Some sort of hashtag needs to be established.
Definitely. So What's the biggest misconception, would you say, about your job?
That we are gatekeepers, that we want to keep people out, that we aren't interested in the talent, that we're on the side of the production exclusively.
Mm.
You know, it's a difficult balance to strike, whether you're going to, you know, you're working, as we said before, between the production and the agents and the actors. And sometimes you do feel a bit like you're shortchanging both of them. But I think managed properly, actually what we're doing is sort of inviting people in rather than trying to keep people out. I do understand that actors are frustrated by the lack of opportunities that some of them are presented with, but I don't think that's necessarily because of what casting directors do. I think that's just because there's so many people, the supply and demand is way off.
So what would you say to actors who maybe think that they see the same faces on TV over and over again and they feel like they can't get in?
That I feel your pain. You know, we do see the same faces on TV a lot, and I think casting directors feel the same thing, that we do sometimes feel like, oh, it'd be great to get a new face in there, but you know, when we're all fighting for ratings, sometimes you want that familiar face so that people feel drawn to the programme, they want to bolster it. So if you're making a TV show and there's two or three famous faces on the poster or in the advert, the chances are that more people will watch it, and then more people will get to see the work that so much has gone into. I do sometimes look at the American system, where they will take more chances on unknown people for lead roles, and think, yeah, it'd be great to do that here. But so, you know, the work that I do, I don't cast a lot of mainstream BBC One, 9 o'clock stuff. So a lot of the youth stuff that I've done, the more E4, ITV2, you do get the opportunity to be a bit more varied with stuff. But yeah, I totally get why actors are frustrated. But in terms of what they can do, that's a trickier thing, you know. I think the one thing you can do is to create more of your own content. And that can be frustrating in its own way, I'm sure. But at least you're doing something. You know, you're out there doing the job that you signed up for. And now that, you know, with YouTube and cameras being so cheap and editing equipment being so cheap, that's more possible than ever. Obviously, people want to be coming in and doing paid work as well. But there do seem to be a variety of new avenues that people can take to get their work out there. And also, we're looking more at things like YouTube and more unconventional routes to find new talent. So I get the frustration, but my advice would be just to get out there and start creating your own stuff.
And off the back of that, do you think now having a sort of online profile and a lot of followers or a lot of YouTube subscribers and little videos up on YouTube, do you think that can make a difference for an actor getting seen for a role or getting noticed?
I think it's tricky, and it's a bit of a double-edged sword, in as much as having lots of Twitter followers means nothing to me. In an age where you can buy Twitter followers, it sort of means nothing, you know. I think if the work that you're generating on YouTube or Vimeo is getting a lot of attention, then yeah, that's great. But I don't think the sort of social status of having lots of followers, that's of no real interest to me. I'll get followers on Twitter and it says they've got 125,000 followers and I've never even heard of them. So my assumption is just they bought them.
Yeah.
Or that I'm just not cool enough to have heard of them. That's the other very possible option. But
you're into Twitter, aren't you? Do you keep in touch with actors on Twitter? I mean, I don't.
I'm into Twitter. You and I have communicated on Twitter, and I certainly don't sort of ignore Twitter. I think I'm more of a puller than a pusher, in that I follow people that I think are interesting, but a lot of that's not really to do with the industry. My Twitter story, as it were, is a weird one, in that it just started out as a personal Twitter, and I had like 200 followers, which is of course how many people are actually interested in what I have to say. And then I put a couple of casting notices on there when I was doing a thing for Channel 4 a few years ago, and then in one day I got like 2,000 followers, and then I didn't want to post silly pictures of Celine Dion anymore, which is all I use. Well, because then it felt like it wasn't for my friends, it was a professional thing. So then I made it a professional Twitter, but it's tricky. It's tricky to use it in the right way. And I'm not a massive fan of people sort of asking me, you know, people send me advice, send me tweets like, how do I become an actor? Hashtag actor. And I'm a bit like,
oh dear.
You want me to respond in 140 characters because I'm not sure that's going to happen. So I don't tend to respond to stuff like that. But if people send me really specific stuff or want to send me a showreel, I may not reply, but I might watch it. I think that's tricky because sometimes I won't actively reply, but I might notice or, you know, so it's, I would never say don't do it, but a bit like emailing and writing into it, casting directors and agents perhaps don't expect a response, but who knows, they might land on the timeline at the right moment.
So off the back of that, how would you suggest if someone wanted to contact you because they were in something or wanted to send you their showreel, what's the best way? Twitter, email?
Definitely not Twitter. I don't think people know where I work, so probably not post. I try and be paperless, I fail, but email.
Email.
That's the best way.
And you mentioned you like Celine Dion photos. Is that worth sticking into the email?
I mean, if I was to suddenly get... Well, I mean, I don't know how many people listen to this podcast, but, you know, if it's millions, which I can only assume it would be, then my inbox is suddenly filled with amazing pictures of Celine Dion. That would not be the worst thing in the world.
Great.
I can't guarantee a job as a result of it, but I would, you know, you can guarantee a lol.
Definitely be pleased.
Yeah.
At least.
I mean, who doesn't like a funny picture of Celine Dion?
So, apart from judging people on their pictures of Celine Dion, how might you go about selecting actors to audition for a role? What's your process?
I sometimes say that I bring in one person that I know, one person that I know of, and one person that I don't know. But that's probably not actually true. It depends, you know, access to directors is increasingly limited, with, you know, they're also busy and trying to get 500 other things done. So if I've only got a morning and I've only got maybe three people for each character, then, you know, you do tend to rely on people that you know, just because you don't want to go through all three appointments and then not be up to the task. But I think as a general rule, if I get my pick, I like to bring in a bunch of people that I know, and I know that, you know, so you're going to have someone that is good. Some people that you've heard of, perhaps someone that you've seen in something recently, haven't actually been in the room with yourself. And then if I can, a couple of, you know, two or three people that I don't know but look interesting. And that can often be as a result of, you know, an interesting photograph, interesting credits, good agent, all the sort of obvious things, really. I mean, I think it's obvious because it's what I do, but, you know, on Spotlight, you get presented with hundreds and hundreds of these of pictures, and you do just have to make a selection sometimes. It's a mix of those things, probably leaning towards the people I know and the people I know of, rather than the people I don't know. On some projects, you get more time and more facilities, you know, like you get given a room for a, you know, period of time, and you can just, me or my assistants can sit in that room and just bring in a whole bunch of new people. And I do try and do generals, but I can't lie, it is generally with the bigger agencies that I do them. In theatre, you know, then if I've seen someone really great, I'll try and bring them in for something.
And so obviously you predominantly cast TV and film.
Yeah.
Do you go to see theatre shows, and are you open to
I go to the theatre every week. I used to go a lot more than I do now, when, you know, I was younger and perhaps had more time on my hands. I used to go like 3-4 times a week. I'd say probably now it's more like once or twice. And realistically, I go to the bigger theatres, you know, to the National and the Donmar, Royal Court, largely because the productions are maybe more to my taste, and the acting standard is incredibly high. I do go to the Fringe, but not as much as I go to the bigger ones.
So some people have a certain part of London that they will go to Fringe Theatre in because it's like near their home or office or house. Do you have that?
Yes.
Where's that?
I'm not saying.
Or just the area, north, south, east?
It's more east. East. I'm more of an east boy.
Okay, so East London, Fringe Theatre, we're all good. Okay, so you said there you try and bring in Someone you know, someone you've heard of, and someone you don't know. So do you generally bring in three people for, a TV role?
I tell you what, it really varies. I used to bring in fewer, but I think as you get increasingly less time with people and less time to cast it in general, you sort of need to bolster it a bit more by having a wider selection. Also, I've taken over a few shows, but I largely have set up new shows. So when you're looking to cast the regulars, you will see more people. Obviously, if it's, you know, a smaller part, one scene or just a few lines, you know, you should be able to nail that within three to five probably people coming in. But God, I've seen, you know, tens of people for parts before.
Do you look for anything in particular, like on their CV, for example, if you're looking for a fairly newish face for a regular role? Would they have to have done a certain amount of TV before, or a big theatre role, or?
I think if they're young, you know, by young I mean sort of early 20s, like not long out of college, and you've got no credits, that support the fact that you can do this job, you've got far more chance of coming in than if you're, say, 35 or 40. Because if you want to come in for a big part on a TV series, and you're 35 or 40 or older, and you've not got any TV credits, you know, I would find myself wondering why. Now, I know that there are people that slip through the net. Of course there are. But say you've got 10 slots to bring in for this actor, and you've got 10,000 or 20,000 people, you know, to choose from. I mean, it's possibly an exaggeration, but certainly hundreds and hundreds of people to choose from, and you've got 10 slots. How do you justify bringing in that person that's got no TV credits at all? Now, if you've seen them in a theatre piece or something and you know that they're really good and you want to champion, that's one thing. But someone that you know nothing about, that you've never seen on stage or on TV and has no TV credits, it'd be a really long shot to bring them in for a TV audition for a sizeable part. Of course, there are loads of, you know, smaller parts that they might be right for, and sometimes it's good that they've not got much TV experience because they'll do one line or a few lines.
No, I think that's useful. I think a lot of actors sort of get to the stage where they do bit parts, and then it's breaking the ceiling into the bigger parts.
So that is a difficult ceiling to break, to change someone's perception of you from being a useful two-line person to being a leading person. That's a tough thing to do. You know, there are however many thousand people on Spotlight, but obviously the ones who are working are very much in the minority. I would like to think that the faces you see on TV regularly, most of them are there because they're really good. And certainly I try and police that as much as I can. You know, I try not to use the latest person from Big Brother just because they're really famous and try and get attention and their social footprint's really good and all that. I don't really care about all that stuff. I'd much rather have someone that's not very well known that's really, really brilliant.
So, what makes a good headshot? You said that they need to stand out to you.
A hat or, like, you know, comedy glasses. It's recent. I mean, that's sort of what they get in the room. In terms of getting my attention, I guess just well-lit or natural lighting that's flattering. You can see the face clearly. Sometimes there's sort of half the face in shadow. And I'm like, well, what happens on that half of the face? What are they hiding? Nothing that's, you know... Obviously, I was joking. Nothing that covers the face, hats, glasses, those kinds of things. And you know, there's a lot of chat, isn't there, about what expression and should I smile? And I just think, get a few pictures on Spotlight. That's the first thing I do, is like look at the first one and I'm like, oh yeah, that's an interesting face. I'm like, right, let's click on the others, see whether they're actually interesting or not. It's sort of like internet dating. Do you know what I mean? Like, you've got to try and interpret the information that's on their Spotlight page and try and glean who they actually are. Because, you know, some of them aren't up to date, some of them have got every credit they've ever had, and it's like, well, wait, what of this is actual proper work that I would term, rather than just something that happened 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I think something, just try and reflect yourself accurately.
And can there be too many photos on a Spotlight profile?
Yeah, I think once you've seen five, you've seen enough. You know, when you see someone's got like 20 pictures, I don't know, it doesn't necessarily look a bit like, are you a model? Are you an actor? Like, what's going on here?
Trying to show too much.
I think the industry can be cruel because it's like, try really hard, but don't look like you've tried hard.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly.
Like, take acting classes, but don't talk about it. You know? Have a CV, but don't put like a fancy border on it, because then you'll look a bit like you don't know how it works. So I think it's very tricky. I think it's something that only comes with time to kind of get the balance between putting effort in and not looking too try hard.
Yeah.
You know, I think putting effort into the right thing, putting the effort into the things that actually make a difference, like managing your nerves in auditions, managing working with script, being emotionally present very quickly in an audition, you know, because we'll get you in, bustle you in, coat off, sit down, right, let's do the scene. You've got to get good at that. There's no good sitting at home after the audition going, well, that wasn't fair. I wasn't given the proper, you know, like whatever you're finding is your stumbling block, that's the thing you should be focusing your attention on, rather than getting new headshots every 5 minutes and, you know, making your CV look really great and making a really amazing website for yourself. I see how that feels like you're doing something proactive, but I think actually that time would be better spent getting really good at your job. You know, getting a really good voice reel, getting a really good show reel together. Number of people that say, oh, I haven't put my show reel together, it's 3 years out of date. I'm like, well, you're literally cutting yourself off from work. You know, a lot of people have problems with nerves and auditions, and that's not okay, you know, for them or for us. You know, I don't want people walking out of the audition room thinking, oh, I wish I could just have controlled my nerves and been present to what I'm doing. You know, You walk into that audition room and it's like an out-of-body experience. The number of people that don't recognise me, you know, a very short time after an audition is huge, because I think they walk in, they just see some, you know, human-shaped blobs in front of them, and they're having such a weird out-of-body experience. They can't actually remember what happens. And I think working on trying to control your nerves, control your anxiety, so that you can actually be in the room, actually have a conversation with somebody and be kind of calm and give the performance that you want to give, rather than the one that your sort of automatic system makes you give.
Yeah.
That's, again, something that I think people... That's time really well spent, you know, just trying to be calm.
Yeah.
Because that's the best thing. When someone comes into the room and you have a bit of a chat, you have a really nice time with them, and then they read and it's like, oh God, they, you know, they're really open to notes and they can actually listen and they're not just going, this is a lot for me to take on.
Audition.
You know, when people come in and you give them a note, or the director gives them a note, and they just go, yeah. And it's like, you're not actually listening to what the note is. You're just going to take the, you know, someone says, oh, the second half of that scene, maybe try increasing the anger a little bit, and because you're freaking out, all you can hear is anger, and then you do the next read and it's just really angry because you just processed one word of a relatively complicated note. That's a shame, you know, because if you were just a bit calmer and a bit more present to what's actually happening in the room, and you can actually listen to what the director says, take it on board, you know, take a second just to sort of feel like to, you know, let your mind and body process what's going on, and then give the director what they want without losing all the brilliant stuff you've already brought to the meeting.
So what makes, do you think, a good showreel?
I'm not a massive fan of montage. Sometimes I just click past it and just push the, you know, the cursor to like a minute in, and I hope that it won't last a minute. The ones when you click it a minute on and it's, the montage is still going, I'm like, oh, I haven't got time for this. People quite often ask, what should I put first? And I want to do comedy and drama. What should I, you know, if you've got a scene that's got a bit of both, obviously that's good. If you haven't, I guess you sort of have to just choose, well, which is the most important to you at this point in your career? You know, do you want to do more comedy stuff, or do you want to do drama and put that first? But also, we jump around, you know, I don't tend to sit and watch a 5 minute showreel from beginning to end. I'll go, right, yeah, that's good, they can do that, let's push it on a bit further and see what else they can do. So showing a variety is always good. I'm not bothered whether it's, you know, professional quality or whether something you've made yourself. I just want to see whether you can act or not. Often it's just to see what they look like when they're moving, see what their voice sounds like, see how their face moves, you know, because obviously you've got these static images on the page, you know, often just one image. And having a showreel just gives you so much more knowledge about a person. It's like a little shortcut to see whether or not they might be right for the thing that you've got.
So, who is your favourite actor right now?
Ooh, right now, I would say my favourite actor is a guy called David Walmsley, who was the lead in Our Town, which is the play I did at the Almeida. He's also in Banished, a new show on the BBC. Yeah. And he's just a really great mix of a normal guy who is incredibly skilled as an actor, and that is something that we look for all the time. You know, I know there's a whole lot of attention put on people like Eddie Redmayne and Benedict Cumberbatch and their background, the fact that they're really posh and all that, and that's great. And I think on film that is something that really does sell well. But in TV, people like Sheridan Smith, Jack O'Connell, those people who feel real to the public because they are real, they're the ones that I get excited about, the sort of Vicky McClure's and people like that. And I think that David has the potential to be one of those people that everyone just loves.
What is your favourite film, TV or theatre production right now?
The Nether, which is a theatre production that the Royal Court had on last year and has just transferred to the West End, I think it's at the Duke of York's, is really challenging, difficult viewing, so theatrical, so entertaining that I think everyone should see it. Favourite TV programme, RuPaul's Drag Race. Do you know that show?
No.
You know RuPaul, the drag queen, she has a reality show. It's the best thing on TV. If you don't watch it, you're missing out. But in terms of the stuff, the work that, what you probably mean, which is the stuff that I might be involved with.
No, you're allowed.
No, no, but I think there's something, you know, there's obviously loads of, I get really annoyed when people say there's no good British TV. I get really fed up with that because I feel like saying, like, are you kidding me? Like, the reason that people talk a lot about American shows is because there's so many episodes. You know, they hang around for a lot longer. But something like Remember Me, which I did, which is one of the things that I'm proudest of, and Run, which is a Channel 4 show that I did, which I completely loved. You know, Remember Me was only 3 episodes. Run was only 4. So they do come and go very, very quickly. In terms of my favourite thing, I really love Orange is the New Black. I'll say that.
Yes.
Diverse casting. You know, not because it ticks boxes, but because it's real. And my friend Jen Houston is the casting director on it, and I'm completely obsessed with her and it, and I bother her all the time with loads of questions. And favourite film? I really enjoyed Birdman.
What project have you got there?
I'm doing Silent Witness for the BBC, which is great because it is the exact thing that I don't normally do, which is that big BBC One, prime time, ratings busting. I think it's 9 million a week.
Oh my goodness.
Crazy. It's doing so well. So I'm doing that, which is really fun. I'm doing a film which I can't really talk about.
Okay, hush hush film.
And a new project for Sky Atlantic, which is exciting as well. Yeah, and then there's always like a bunch of indie films that are knocking around that may or may not happen, but yeah, there's 2 or 3 of those that are sort of on the back burner. But really, yeah, the main thing is Silent Witness.
And what are you doing right after this interview? Lunch?
Lunch.
Where?
I go to Pod on Great Eastern Street. If they want to give me anything free, that would be great.
Just loads of actors will be there now tomorrow.
What, buying free stuff?
Yeah. Hi, Andy.
If it's free stuff in Pod, I really don't mind. Maybe I should tweet about it or something. I did that, you know, that thing where you get an Uber code.
Yeah.
And then you tweet. I was like, oh my god, I've got loads of followers on Twitter. I'm like, maybe I'll get loads of free money. Nothing.
Totally. No one took you up on your Uber.
They're not interested. They just want to know when the next job's coming along. And that, do you know what? That's fine. That's as it should be. I think I did it when I was a bit drunk and I was like, oh, maybe I'll get loads of free money on Uber. And I got nothing. And I was like, right, well, that's me put in my place. Fair enough.
Well, if anyone's looking for an Uber code, what's your Twitter tag?
At Andy B Casting.
There we go, you can find it.
Anyone wants to get me anything from Pod or give me free money on Uber.
Celine Dion photos.
I mean, between Celine Dion, Uber and Pod, that really does account for about 80% of my daily life. Casting fits in there somewhere, but Pod, Uber and Celine, they're the real things I care about.
Amazing. Well, thank you, Andy Briley.
Well, thanks for having me. Hope it was helpful.
A pleasure.